2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. Welcome back. I have, this is a second episode in a two-part series with Chris Kahn, and we're joined today with his wife, Jeanette. And episode one, we highlighted the story of Austin, their child that they lost through pediatric cancer, one of which I won't try to describe. I can't say that name, but I'll let Chris give you a refresher on that. Welcome back to the show, and welcome, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you came on to join us.
Hi, thank you.
Chris, tell us a little refresher about Austin and just to kind of give a highlight for the audience that's just joining us on this episode.
Yeah, so as we talked in like the first episode of this, Austin, you know, is 15 years old, and at age in 2018, he passed away from DIPG, which you refuse to try to pronounce. You have to just Google search it, right? So basically what it means is his cancer developed within his brainstem pons and grew outward. So thus you can never go into your brainstem and split it open and take the cancer out. So unfortunately, after 14 months of ups and downs, of thinking we beat it, and then only to succumb to it, that whole journey of that process, unfortunately, Austin passed away. But in that, there was all these beautiful stories that came about that myself, Jeanette, our older daughter, Kayla, she sent me something that I'd love to share here too about what she learned from her brother, because it wasn't just her brother, it was her best friend.
Yeah.
They're only like 2 years apart. So they've done a lot. And, you know, we've moved everywhere. So they had to rely on each other a lot. And so we try to focus on what we learned from Austin. Watching your teenage son learn and fight to walk again, to gain motor function, is something that is inspiring, to say the least. But then what do you do with that inspiration? Like, yeah, it's great. We all watch feel-good movies. We all hear great motivational speakers. But then what do you do with it?
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just a fleeting moment of inspiration if you don't do anything. So how do you make it some type of personal, like, revelation to yourself? Like, how does it become a part of you?
Yeah.
And that's what we wanted the second part to be, is like, how do we grow from this? How do we become a better person from this? Not going to be the same person anymore, right? So now it's like redefining how we are, who we are, our relationship, and how we don't damage each other. Because we've learned in the past that like tragedies like this can destroy marriages.
Absolutely.
And they often do.
There was months we didn't sleep in the same bed. I would stay during the week and Jeanette would come on the weekend to sleep by the side of Austin. So we would sleep in the hospital fold out bed together, just so we would sleep together once a week.
Wow.
And that was our life. And these are all the things that people just don't know that goes on with a child that's going through cancer. You don't see that stuff. You don't see a lot of that.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Do you want to share that story that Kayla?
Yeah, I'll do that now. All right. So just for everybody, Kayla's our 22-year-old daughter who's a cast member down at Disney World. If you go down there, you may meet her once or twice. But she couldn't get here. She wanted to dial on. She even offered up some of her shifts, and nobody picked it up. But she still sent me a text this morning, so I just wanted to read it to you. It says, the most important thing I've learned during my healing process is that healing is not linear. All too often, we place expectations and timelines on ourselves to move on, when that is entirely unrealistic. Everyone's healing journey and grieving process is going to look very different. And expecting ourselves to just move on is simply unreasonable, because you never will move on, but you will move forward. As you move forward, your relationship with your loved one who has passed will continue, just in a different capacity. I have both good days and bad days, even now. But every day I continue to see my brother Austin's influence on my life. And that is something I will forever be grateful for. Throughout the time he was sick, it was extremely rare to hear Austin complain. Despite every day being an uphill battle, he always focused on the positive and continued to show up for me, both as a brother and as a best friend. His unwavering support and kindness to others during something so difficult inspires me every day to be more resilient. He led by example and taught me to show up and support those I care about, regardless of my own circumstances.
Wow. So beautiful. That really highlights all the things we just talked about in the first episode, right?
Well, it's like we lived in the same house.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, wow, that's a lot of insight and wisdom from someone so young. But I guess that makes sense if she went through so much even younger. I mean, 22, most 22-year-olds are still trying to figure out what in the world.
She was, what, 17 when he passed away? Yeah.
That's a really pivotal time of life when you're kind of discovering who you are, leaving high school, going to next steps, and to have that kind of trauma and tragedy and personal loss. You can hear that in her words, but talk about inspiring.
Yeah.
I want to meet that girl and just give her a big hug.
Like,
that's every psychology book and talk on grief and all the good pieces in one short little letter from her. That's incredible.
But that's 5 years later.
Yeah.
That's five years later.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's a lot of growth, right? I'm sure that there's been a lot of ups and downs in that. And just like she said, it's not linear.
It's not linear. And it's not the same. Like you said, you're from the same household, but I think maybe that's where we'll go today with this episode. You can be in the same household, attend the same funeral, and have lost the same person, and your grief journey is still your unique grief journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
It took me a while to kind of figure that out. I feel like it was like 9 months almost after Austin passed away and Kayla came back home, and she's showing me all her videos that her and Austin would make on Snapchat. And it was like, oh my goodness, like she knew a different Austin than I knew. You know, you forget as a parent that when your kids leave your house and go to school, they're like with those peers and teachers probably more than they are in your own house. And like they had classes together, even though she was a senior and he was a freshman. She convinced him to do choir and he ended up loving it. But I think that's when I realized, you know, her relationship with Austin was different than mine. And her grief, you know, with that relationship was different. And she had a very special, you know, relationship with him. And she did. She knew a different Austin than I did. And it almost, you know, made me a little jealous. I'm like, can you send those? I will never get mad at you guys for making little videos anymore, I promise. But I can't ever send them to me because it's just fun to see how he interacted with his friends and with his sister.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. So we were talking on the phone when we did our pre-interview and Jeanette came home and you put us on speaker and she didn't really want to. She's like, no, Chris does the talking. I'm okay about him talking about these things. And I was like, no, I really feel like just think about it. And then you decided that you'd come on. I really appreciate you coming on and being willing to share. I know for me, it's been healing to share part of my grief through this podcast and in my relationships. But I felt like what you shared with me on the phone was really, I think that it's important to hear, especially because loss of a child does often end up resulting in broken homes. And what I find interesting about the story, going back to our first episode, when Chris opened up and started speaking to us, I felt it was really profound when he shared that when he met you, that talking about his needs and wants in a relationship were really key, and that you were on that same page with him. And that has been something that you guys have carried through in this relationship. And I think it's actually one of the most important parts of a relationship, being able to ask for our wants and needs. We can't be mind readers, right? Yeah. And we can't also meet those needs all the time. But if we know what they are, we can say, I'm unable to do that, or this isn't the way that I can meet that need. It may not be all of it, right? But it's that communication and the ability to say, I want to meet that need, and this is the way that I am capable of doing that or not, right?
Right. I think that was one thing. It was kind of a lesson learned. So, you know, a few years before, you know, we did this journey with Austin, we were stationed and living in Korea, and we had a stillbirth. And I think a lot of other things came into play, probably postpartum depression, definitely. But I could see how we were kind of grieving and dealing with it separately and not including in each other and not communicating, and how it nearly, I feel like it could have really torn us apart. And so when we kind of went through this diagnosis with Austin, and especially towards the end, before he even passed away, we kind of made a commitment that we need to, you know, make sure that we communicate. And we're very different personalities. Chris, with the grieving process, he gets angry and he gets mad and he gets upset. And I had to be like, not taking that personally, and it's not directed at me, and it's okay. That's his outlet. And it is nothing against me. And he just has to communicate that he's just mad that he's missing Austin. And that's just how he's dealing with it. Me, I tend to be a little bit more introspective. I kind of like shut down in a way. But, you know, I think about it internally, and I don't want to, you know, talk about it a lot of times, sometimes as I'm like initially feeling it. And so I just had to tell Chris, I said, I'm not mad at you. I'm not, you know, trying to distance myself from you. I'm just feeling really sad, and I just need a moment to myself. And so I think it's just really realizing that my way of grieving is good for me and it's okay. And him recognizing and letting me do that. And the way he grieved is what's good for him. And that's okay. And as long as we understand and are communicating that our relationship, we're good. This is just how, at the moment, we're just trying to deal and process with the grief that we're feeling right now. I think that's one thing we still always try to have to remind ourselves, because, you know, as time goes by, it's still, you know, it still creeps in sometimes. And we don't necessarily recognize that, oh, I'm having a moment because I'm missing Austin, because it doesn't come as often. Where in the beginning, yes, of course, you know, you can naturally assume that. And so I just have to make sure that I just tell him, I'm not mad at you. I'm just having a hard time and feeling sad and missing Austin. And then it's like, okay, I got it. And we allow each other to do that. And then we're good and we can move on.
I call that holding space. That's how I refer to it. Like, right? It's like you hold space for that person. It's like, this isn't about you. It's okay. I'm going to hold space for you and allow you whatever you need and not make this about us, right? We don't need to make it about something that it's not. I love that.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it was like, you know, if I'm sad and depressed, we learned this with, you know, in Korea, like I wouldn't want to talk to Chris about it because I didn't want to get him sad and depressed. And so I think sometimes in our mind, that's what we're thinking. Then we realize we're really isolating ourselves even more and more. And so it's a lesson actually I learned from Austin. He would, you know, go to chemo on Fridays. And then Saturday was his day to just like be by himself and away from everybody and be sick and just kind of deal with it and just be okay with letting it kind of just not wanting to face the world that day. And then Sunday, he was up and ready, and he was ready to fight. And he would do his duties. He was still going to school. And so after he passed away, I remember thinking there are some days where it really consumes you and you're like, I don't want to get out of bed. And I was like, you know what? Austin gave himself permission to stay in bed one day. I can do that. I'm going to give myself permission just to not get out of bed. This afternoon or tomorrow, I'm getting out of bed and I'm going to fight this because I think it's dangerous to let yourself go down too deep because it's harder to get out of it. But I kind of learned that from him. Just it's okay to allow yourself that time, you know, and you don't have to explain yourself. I mean, I had great friends and there were some times we were supposed to get together and I just wouldn't. And I was like, you know, that's not usually how I am. I'm usually worried about what people think of me. And I was like, you know, I got to give myself this time and just let myself be in the depths of it. And then I'll fight this afternoon or tomorrow, but I will fight.
I love that. I love that. Giving yourself that permission to have that moment and also set a goal that, and when I'm done, it's time to move forward. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
And we're back. I am so excited to have you guys on. Your energy is great. Such a tragic story. I know that not your personal depths of tragedy, but certainly, you know, can relate to it in some ways through my own loss. I'm sure Jenny can as well. What does resiliency mean to you, Jeanette?
I think resiliency, I don't think it has to necessarily be in your face. I think something that I learned from Austin is he was a quiet strength, you know, and being able to continue to move forward in the face of hard times and in the face of trials. And so really to me, that's what resilience is, the ability to be able to move and push forward despite the obstacles that are coming your way.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's a beautiful definition.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting, both of these episodes, it's just that move forward, move forward. Yeah. And we talked a little bit about it in the first, and Jenny, you weren't here for that first episode, but we talked about the difference, and the American culture is move on, move on, move on.
And check the box and get over it.
Right. You know, go through your checklist of the seven stages of grief and then you get to move on. But it's not like that. It's not like that at all. Not only is it not linear and it's not a checklist and it doesn't happen in order, it's all over the place. It's happening all the time. And it's not that linear, just like Kayla said. And it's really about learning to move forward. And I feel like the guests that we've had on the show and definitely here today, it's a big theme. And I think it's a good conversation to have because I think we need to change that mindset in our American culture that people who are grieving or who have gone through loss, it's never moving on. You don't replace a person. It's different than losing a pet. It's different than a lot of losses. It's very different. And you don't move on. But you can move forward, but you always carry that love and those experience with that person. And frankly, I never wanted to move on. My husband will always be the father of my children. He didn't leave me. He didn't want to leave me. And he's my children's grandchildren. So even if I move forward and choose into another relationship,
that person has to accept that we're not going to stop talking about John, right? And and I think it's a little bit different when you're dealing with a child, because people move forward in their own lives. Life is rolling. It's a lot different. He doesn't have children that he left behind or grandchildren, but you still want to keep that memory and those lessons a valuable and very real part of your world and your lives. And I really love that you're coming on and sharing this, because you get to make Austin's story a part of other people's lives so that they can have understanding that it's not about moving on, but it is about moving forward. I love this.
And Jeanette, I love what you said about, and Michelle too, about making space. No matter how much time goes by, you'll still have those waves of grief or those experiences. I would love to hear you, Jeanette, share a little bit about maybe the evolution of your grief. Again, not that it starts and stops, but there is kind of a difference to initial grief, that first year or two when you're literally drowning in the very thought of moving forward without that person. And then you get a few years further out and you do start to have lessons and maybe hindsight and reflection. You're kind of on the same timeline as Michelle and I both are with the loss of our spouses. This is 5 years, and I don't know if it's cultural or what, but we're really big on those milestones, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I would love if you could share a little, maybe the evolution of that mother's grief. I've never lost a child. My mother-in-law has now lost two. Oh. I imagine you can't help but pass every birthday thinking this year he'd be this old, this year he'd be doing this, this year he might have
it's
done that.
True. It is the constant. I feel like no matter how much time has passed, like you're still thinking about what age he would be. I mean, we initially, you know, we celebrate his birthday by, you know, I make his favorite foods, right? And, you know, he loved my enchiladas and chocolate covered strawberries that we would make together. And so that's kind of, you know, what we do. And I think the first couple years we would sing happy birthday, but it would end up in tears. And we're like, why are we doing this to ourselves? Right. So, you know, you kind of like learn things that maybe aren't as helpful, but I think initially you feel strong. Like I think Chris kind of mentioned it right after, we felt kind of really strong and like we're getting through this. And it was like, I feel like around that 4 month mark when we moved, everything changed. And that was the hardest thing for me, because, you know, we're moving to new places that don't know Austin and don't know his story. And it's like when people ask you, you know, when you first meet people, the first thing they ask is, oh, how do you have kids? How many? And then, so it's like, okay, you have the decision. Do I just rip off the Band-Aid, or how do I answer this where, you know, you're just meeting people for the first time? And I found like a kind of a niche way to do that without having to, you know, really bring in the tragedy of Austin so, you know, soon and introducing people. You know, I usually start with Heidi, and then I start with, you know, our oldest is this and this is what she's doing. And then they kind of get sidetracked because they think it's, you know, so cool what she does. So then it's kind of like they don't even, you know, they don't even think about, you know, the rest. But I think that surrounding yourself with people that even if they didn't know Austin, they can still, you know, be there for you. And I found that the best way for me in the grieving process is to talk about him. And I think a lot of people, they know your story. They know that you lost a son. They purposely try not to mention that because they don't want to upset you. They don't want, and then it feels even more isolating. So I kind of like, if I know people know, I'll start talking about Austin, just like, oh yeah, Austin, when he was this age, and I'll tell stories of him. And it's like my cue to them, like, it's okay to bring him up. It's okay to talk about him. I love talking about him because it brings me such joy and it helps me remember him. So I think just kind of finding what works for you. Everybody's different and it helps talking with other people and get their stories and what helps them and kind of like figuring it out along the way.
Do you feel like it's like the elephant in the room? I know right after my...
I know that you know. So why are we talking about this?
And it is, again, it's like Michelle said, there's some of those cultural norms that we just need to break through. And guess what? If you talk to me about the person I love so much who has passed away, I might get emotional. Please don't be scared away by my emotion. Don't think the fact that I might choke up on my words or you might see tears in my eyes. That doesn't mean never talk about him again. I love it. I love that you mentioned your daughter's relationship with your son, and how she knew a different Austin than you did. And I understand that little ting of jealousy. My husband had a lot of siblings. They all knew him for years and years longer before I ever met him. My husband was also in the military. He has battle buddies he went to war with. I was never there. And I found myself craving other people's memories. If somebody knew anything about my husband, if they had a picture, if they had a story, whether it was serious and significant or just silly and mundane, please tell me. Let me see that part of him that you knew. So when you said that, that really resonated with me.
My favorite is when people just randomly send me a text and say, I found this picture of Austin. I mean, I love it.
Yeah, I just actually received a text just a few weeks ago from one of my husband's subs. And it just said, hey, Michelle, I just want you to know that I think about John from time to time, especially when I have a problem that I know that he would know the answer to. I wish I could just call him up. Our family tells funny stories of things he would say, and we miss him. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
That's the best medicine. I want someone else to miss him, too. And if we're laughing, great. And if we're crying, great. And if we leave a little somber, that's fine. There's nothing better than knowing you're not the only person remembering and missing that person.
And it is interesting, just like you said about the videos of your kids, I saw some videos that my daughter took with my husband of them being silly and goofy together that I never saw while he was living. Like they were just being, you know, she just took it. It was just a moment. And seeing those now, I mean, sometimes I will burst into tears, like, because it's so shocking and it's something I've never seen.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily of sadness. It's just like, oh.
It's just emotion. It's Why are we so afraid of emotion?
Yeah. And so, yeah, I love that you brought that up. You guys had a ritual the first week that, and this is what burst me into tears. So just steady yourself, audience. You had a ritual that first week after losing Austin. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think Chris is the one that really kind of thought about it. So I'll let you kind of tell it.
So when Austin, we knew everything was going to happen and we knew we were going to say goodbye before we left the hospital that day. So our family, just me, Jeanette, Kayla, and Heidi, we just held hands with the hospital and said, listen, for the next week, there's no crying by yourself. If you're sad at home, you go find somebody and you hold them. Like nobody cry on their own because this is a dangerous time for us. Like we're all very vulnerable right now. And we're all hurting. And it's a shared experience within our family. So if you don't feel like no one understands, look around us. We all understand. We all know. We all miss the same person. Like it hurts us too. But that ritual was started in my life when I was 15. So I have three younger sisters. And when things got so bad in our home, we knelt in our front room and all held hands and said, we'll never leave each other. And to this day, I still talk to my sisters once a week. And we promised each other that we will always be by each other's side. And that knowledge that I learned of family support, how important it is, carried over into our relationship to where when we were all at the worst part of our vulnerability as a human being, we all decided that nobody cries on their own. And so we had people running downstairs, just like diving onto the couch, and like, just cry. It's okay. Just let it out. Like, I know how healing that is to have somebody hug you back and say, like, I know. And you know that they know. They're not comparing it to their lost animal, which is sad, right? But we still got to eat after. It's okay to compare things, but it's something special when somebody that like suffers with you. And that is the power of like powerful communication. Like to have that is such a unique experience. And we just capitalize that as a family that
I am so impressed by that, that you had the mindset. And like you said, it had come from, you know, previous experience when you were younger. How beautiful for you to turn to each other and not let yourselves turn on each other, because that happens. So I lost my husband. I've got seven kids who all have different ages, different personalities, different styles of emotion in general. And I'm thinking of the beautiful, safe space you've created in your home to where even if it's anger, okay, be angry. If it's quiet and reflective and I need to ignore all of you for a day or so, okay. If it's I'm going to cry on the couch and I need you to come hug me. I love the different ways you've mentioned in just like the last 20 minutes that you can feel and express grief because it comes out different ways. With my oldest son, it was anger. I mean, anger at the world, anger at everything, anger in his body. It wasn't that he sometimes would be angry. He just was anger. And it really took probably 2 or 3 years until that kind of started to wear down. And I'll admit, sometimes I did take it personally. And I'd kind of get mad like, hey, I lost your dad too. And I'm not stomping around the house all day. But I'd have to kind of remind myself, those are his tears. He's not going to sit and cry with me. But he might stomp around mad at the world for a while. And I just, I'm learning from you as parents, as a lot of my kids now are getting old enough to recognize their own grief, even though a lot of time has come away from the immediate loss they experienced, they're now old enough to process it in a different way. And I'm sure with your daughters too, and with each of you, you process it at different stages and ages of life. And I really appreciate you sharing that with me because I think that can help us in our home to kind of, I'm going to be a little more mindful of that, that shared space of grief, whatever grief looks like. And maybe if you're going to be angry, maybe I'll be angry with you and not try to talk you out of being angry. Or if you're going to be quiet, okay, I'll give you that space and not force you to tell me how you feel. So I appreciate this. This has been very helpful. Everybody's trying to navigate your own grief and help the grief of the people you love. And that's a lot of grief to deal with.
We need to take a break and we'll be right back. We're back. Jeanette, what do you have to share with us that you haven't shared already? Do you have some words of wisdom or thoughts or memories? Anything that you want to give to our audience to teach us?
The answers today might not be the answers tomorrow. It's an evolution going through the process. And, you know, what might have worked in the beginning with Heidi when she was, five or six when Austin passed away is different how we need to help her deal with it. So, I mean, I would say just always keeping the communication open. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to be reminded of that. Sometimes Chris and I, you know, we kind of like start going back to our natural ways and we have to remind each other, remember we said we're going to communicate, you know, if you're feeling bad, just let me know. But the answers, I would say that's probably the biggest lesson that I learned. It's an evolution and it's not always going to be the same answer that it was a year or two ago.
Yeah.
That might be my new favorite t-shirt line. We joke about having t-shirts with all these amazing one-liners from our guests.
Every show has one.
The answers today might not be the answers tomorrow. Again, that space you talked about creating. Yeah. Space for different emotions. Space for different experience. Space for different personalities. And space even for yourself, that my grief today might not be the same as my grief tomorrow. It's not just let alone my kid, my whoever else's, but within myself, giving myself permission to feel it differently tomorrow and to let go of what didn't work. I love that you mentioned that earlier on. Singing happy birthday on his birthday was not the happiest thing to do. So guess what? We're not going to sing happy birthday. You're not going to feel bad about it. You're not going to guilt yourself. You're not going to say, well, the textbook said I should ... But giving yourself and yourselves permission to find what works today, and that's good enough. And I guess tomorrow we'll have to figure out what works tomorrow. I love that.
So I'll say that from my journey is that I spent a lot of time the first years making sure everybody else was okay. Mm-hmm. And I went out of my way to make sure, like, the family's okay. The family's okay. Everybody's okay. Like, just keep centering yourself. Like, and I'm a person of structure. So I work out every single morning. I have to balance it with my spirituality, my physical, my diet. Every day I start my day, I have to be centered. And over the past year, I found myself slipping into depression. And I couldn't explain why. Because in my mind, I'm like, I am doing everything I am supposed to. I'm not lacking in any area. I eat right. I exercise. I treat my family. I love my wife. We we pray together, we go to church together, we're doing everything together. And I would just find myself like slipping into depression. And I'm like, what is happening? And I could not figure it out. And it got to the point where Jeanette's like, you really need to talk to somebody. And so like when your wife points out your flaws, you know, you can either like, well, then I know it's like, Jeanette is very reserved in criticism. So if she says something, I know it's got to be like serious. So I go and reach out to a therapist and I start to describe what's happening to me. And first session, she says, you're going through secondary loss syndrome. So I'm like, what's that? So of course I'm just like Google searching in the car on my phone. And she talked to me about focusing on acceptance with being sad. And what I found is that my childhood had taught me some bad habits of being sad equates to suicide. And so in my mind, what I was doing was don't hang out in sadness because it equals suicide. But that's a false narrative and it's not true. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to stay in there and feel those emotions. And I, over the past year, I've had to learn to accept that and be okay with the emotion of being sad. But it doesn't mean you're going to go down the road of suicide at all. It's okay to have a bad day. And guess what? Tomorrow, the next day, I always felt better. Because yeah. I was doing all the little things right, I can fight through this.
Is part of that because you were having this sadness and you were like pushing it away? So instead of just feeling it, you started to like kind of deny it a bit or just not give
like
it.
Emotionally, I always would share Austin. I would cry. Mm-hmm. I would do all those things. But it was telling his story. I never let it like self-reflect where I would just let it simmer myself. I'd always tried to like preoccupy myself with do something else.
Yeah.
Like,
so you weren't
if somebody
feeling
else is sad,
it in your body.
Focus on myself. Yeah.
You weren't
yeah.
feeling it in your body. You weren't acknowledging because our emotions live in our body. And for us to really heal, we've got to feel that, connect with it, and then let it pass. Right. And yeah. it's only until we get to that level that we're just able to acknowledge this is just an emotion. This isn't forever. This is what it's teaching me and let it go. Right.
Yeah, and I think that was 4 years later.
Wow.
That also I'm just driving in the car and I'm like, what is happening? And like, it took a chunk out of my confidence. Because the hardest thing I had was that I had Austin passing away. And as a father, I couldn't stop it. And like, no matter how much I read, how much I learned about oncology, I couldn't stop it. And when he passed away, it was like this huge void in me. Like I couldn't stop my son from dying. Yeah. Like it's such a helpless feeling. I know it sounds kind of like, of course you can't, you know, but as a father, like I couldn't stop like the worst thing happening. And that was the hardest thing for me to learn and stay in that moment of being sad. It was hard to let myself be vulnerable that way to where saying I can't do something was hard for me to accept. And this reality of life, though,
yeah,
you can't stop everything.
You know, I feel like I've gotten this lesson 500 times and, you know, losing a
husband. Still have to learn it again and again.
And again and again and again. And it's like, I'm like, okay, I got it. But then I realize, oh, I guess I didn't because I'm trying to control the outcome. Yeah. So a good example is I lose my husband to cancer, right? I learn I can't control this. Not only does he get cancer, but he gets it. It's not treatable. He's gone in 22 months, right? Like I was not in control of that situation and I had to surrender to it. And I did eventually. And so many areas of my life, even at his celebration of life, there were things that I wanted there that ended up not happening. And I was just like, whatever, like in the big scheme of things, doesn't really matter. And I really started to really let go of my perfectionism, my need to do everything, my drive, 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 drive. And then I start dating and I'm like trying to play the numbers game. I'm like, well, if I date a younger guy, guys mostly die 7 to 8 years sooner than women. And I'm playing this game, right? And I just recently found out one of the guys I dated who was much younger than I am died before his 50th birthday. And it was such a shock to my system, even though it didn't work out. And there was no heartache about that. It was a shock to my system that I'm like, I can't play the numbers game either. There's no guarantee. There's no, and I know that, right? I intellectually know it. But that knowledge that that happened with somebody that I dated, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm not in control. You just want to so badly control the outcomes, right?
You just want to fix what's wrong. I think especially as a parent, and I can't even imagine as a father, Chris, there's kind of that protective nature where you want to fix what's wrong and we can't. And all we can do is face it because we get so frustrated. I do find it almost liberating when I do remind myself to let go because I want so badly to fix it or perfect it or control it. And, when that reminder comes that once again, I'm not in charge, as much as that's frustrating, I find it also to be freeing because it's like that weight on my shoulders, the big backpack I'm carrying around that I should be able to solve this for all of my kids and fix this and change that. Actually, no. All I got to do is face today. So let's just figure that out one little bite at a time.
So I'm curious, Chris, getting to this, you know, whole process of we're not in control and cancer is unfortunately a great teacher of that concept, right? Especially when it's results in no treatment or no ability to stop it. What have you developed in your life in order to get to that next phase? If you're not in control, then what?
Well, that's why I say that I ended up defining acceptance in three different ways, is that I had to learn that in my viewpoint, acceptance is sometimes that I'm not going to be able to get an answer and I have to be okay with no answer, that it's not going to be solved and I can just put it in the shelf and just walk away unfinished. And that's hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me. If I'm doing anything, like I have to be really good. Like I don't like being average at all. So if I pick up anything, I just like obsess about it until I'm good. Then I'm like, okay, now I can say I'm a part of this.
Yeah.
Regardless of what it is. But this was something that I'm like, as smart as I got in oncology, I still couldn't solve my son's problem.
Yeah.
And that's where I had to define that there's some things that you're not going to be able to master. Grief being one of them, I'll never be able to master. I'll never be able to heal the hole in my heart that Austin made. But I have to be able to just put those emotions aside sometimes and be like, okay, how do I reflect on myself and how am I processing this? How do I choose to be a better person? How do I choose to be a better husband? How do I choose to be a brother father? Instead of being sad, which I find myself being, why has this happened to me, right? All I want is a father-son relationship. Coming from a kid that grew up with the father not in the home, it's all I craved, right? I'm surrounded by nothing but women. Like, I just wanted, like, the boy. Like,
yeah, I know. I keep thinking about that while you've been telling your story. You know? I know. I'm like, Harry, he has a son.
So like...
He has a son, finally, and it's so wrong. Like, ugh.
But instead of focusing on, like, what I don't have, I look at what I do have. And so I have extremely talented daughters that love their dad. I have a wife that loves me like through thick and thin, who's held my hand through everything. And I should be grateful for those things instead of focusing on the things I don't have. And what I found is that's where I find more joy. I'm grateful for, I have best friends. I have, you know, my father's re-entered my life. I've had all these different things that have happened. I have loving sisters that I have a support. Just because I can't define exactly what they do or who they are, doesn't matter. Just be grateful that I have people in my life.
Absolutely.
That's been really the long end of a journey to defining acceptance.
I love that. For me, I have, in this whole I'm not in control thing, I have come up with my own saying. And it's, this is for me. So no matter what happens, good or bad, I don't need to actually judge it as good or bad. It's just, this is for me. So what is the lesson? And so it's getting into trusting the process of life. And that's where I've gotten with this process. But it sounds like that's part of where you're at too, in that whole acceptance, right? Where it's just, this is for me. It's not happening to me, but this is for me. And there's a very different mindset about, is this happening to me? Kind of victim standpoint. Is this happening for me? Kind of the heroine, right? How can I grow and learn from this and trust this process? Whatever is here in this earth life for me, it's for me.
And I love the role that gratitude plays in expressing that to focus on what you do have, what you are grateful for, and how that can really just shift your mind away from what you're missing or lacking, even though you still miss it and lack it. That's powerful.
But it's more important that I learned is that I tell those people that.
Yeah.
Like I tell Jeanette how much I'm grateful for her, that I tell my kids how much I'm grateful for them, and that I do things that show it.
Yeah.
Because Jeanette needs to know how the battle I'm fighting in my own head. And she has to tell me what she's battling in her own head, because not only is it communication that we both kind of share, but I learn things from her. I learn better, healthy habits that she does. Right. Cause I can't explain my emotions without getting like extremely like emotional about it, either good or bad, anger. Like it's passionate about it. Right. Mm-hmm. She's like, are you upset? And I was like, no, I just like, you know, and I just, you know, it's hard to explain how it feels. Like she tries hard to watch sports with me. Right. And I would get mad because she's like, ask questions. And I'm just like, it's just not the same. Right. She's like, what do you mean? And so I had to sit down and explain her. It's because when I watched with Austin, I didn't have to explain anything.
Yeah.
We would talk about players' contracts and all the little other things, their careers, right? It's a different conversation. And like, bless my wife for like sitting and watching boring sports with me, but it's a different dialogue. Instead of saying, I miss the dialogue with Austin, which I always will, but I have it. You know what I mean? I'm grateful that I had that experience.
Yeah.
To have a son that like loved their dad and like looked up to their dad is a part of the relationship that I really needed as a person to heal a lot of part of my childhood. And I was grateful that I was given that. And I have a wife and I have daughters that are willing to suffer through watching sports with me. I'm grateful. But also I have lots of friends I can talk to too. So it's just learning.
Well, I'm so glad that you came on today to share your story, to share your lesson of self-awareness, self-development, growth. I mean, that's why we're all here. And it's unfortunate that sometimes it's in these tragic stories that they provide opportunities to learn how to be a better individual, not only for ourselves, but for those around us. I love you too. Your story is heart touching. Before we close, really quick, I know that you're involved in a foundation. You talk and help raise funds for children's pediatric cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So real quick. So it's Alex and the Mid-Aidstown Foundation. When Austin was passed away, like most people do, they want to create a foundation in their child's memory or their spouse's memory. Unfortunately, with pediatric cancer, there's a lot of foundations created. Pediatric cancer remains one of the least funded organizations to find a cure. And with DIPG, children have a 0% chance. And so I was trying to think of a way to bring awareness and create a foundation. That's why I found Alex and the Mid-Aidstown Foundation. Alex was a little girl that died from cancer. I think it's been 20 years now. So Liz Scott family created the foundation. She started a little lemonade stand, created revenue, all donated directly towards pediatric cancer and helping to find a cure. I jumped on board with that and became one of their ambassadors. And so I speak at events. I reach out to grieving families when they lose a child from cancer or in their process of it. Not to necessarily share that I know what they're going through, because cancer is different for everybody, every family dynamic, but I know what grief feels like, you know, and I can at least tell them, hey, and try to offer them resources through Alex and the Mid-Aidstown Fund to help families with deferring the cost of, you know, families that live rurally, come into a city, put up in a hotel, stuff like that. They help with a lot of different organizations. So I think in total, we've been able to raise, the 5 years I've been involved, just for Austin, it's been like around 300,000 for DIPG. Different organizations have donated, different events. all towards DIPG to help find a cure. So
that's amazing. Thank you for doing that. It's so important, especially I love that it helps families that are struggling as they're going through the process as well. It's such a gift.
This has been a beautiful conversation, not just about self-reflection and kind of an individual journey, but I've loved listening to you as a couple. Mm-hmm. I've loved hearing kind of that interplay, that relationship, that way you've turned toward each other and helped create space for yourselves and for each other and for your girls. And that's going to resonate in my mind a lot for me to think about in my own family dynamics. So thank you for sharing the individuality of your grief journey, but also sharing how you've shared it. And in doing so, helped each other and helped yourselves create that space. That's going to stick with me. To all of our listeners, we hope you've been just as enlightened as we have been and just as inspired. And like Chris said at the very beginning, it's great to be inspired, but it doesn't really matter unless you do something with that inspired energy. So think about today, what can you do? Who can you help? Who can you impact? What good can come from lessons you've learned either through this story or your own story, and then let's all get some action going here. Also, if you're listening, we're grateful for you being a follower here. We hope that you'll find us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a like, a rating, and a review. And mostly, we hope you'll be willing to share your story with us and with our listeners. You can reach out to us through email at rrpodcast@ksl.com, or better yet, go find us on Instagram or Facebook. You can send us a quick message, or there's even a little book now button where you can schedule a phone call with Michelle. Kind of a little pre-interview conversation. Let's get your story out here. Let's share the tools of resiliency that you have learned, because I promise you, all of us listening, no matter how many tools we think we have, we could all use some more.
And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their life. Have a great day.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.